We have been searching for that proverbial fountain of youth for as long as we have been capable of searching. Though we have searched in many places and spent many fortunes doing so, we still grow old. This leads us to ask, can we maintain what we have so we can retain what we want? And that is our youthfulness.
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Welcome to the 1353rd edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in San Jose del Cabo, who are tuned into the Food Chain podcast at metrofarm.com or Spotify or wherever. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, as we grow old, we begin resisting the fact that we are growing old. And so we begin our resistance by searching for that fountain of youth in a package. However, few, if any, anti-aging products do what they promise they will do. As described in Dr. Michael Greger's book, How Not to Age, many of these products exploit scientific breakthroughs to package fraudulent anti-aging nostrums. And there are a bunch of them, right? For example, 19th century advances in magnetism led to ads asserting, there need not be a sick person in America if our magneto-conservative underwear would become a part of the wardrobe of every lady and gentleman. Less comically, more tragically, public interest in Marie Curie's work led to a range of radioactive products said to revitalize and energize. But as one Wall Street Journal headline read, the radium water worked fine until his jaw came off. Today, we can see these so-called science-ploitation cures being sold on almost every street corner. But as the headline in Scientific American read, there is no truth to the fountain of youth. And so today we pause to ask, how can we maintain what we have so we can retain what we want? And that is, of course, our youthfulness. And so who better to ask than Dr. Michael Greger, author of How Not to Age? Dr. Greger, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Pleasure. In reading through your How Not to Age and scrolling through your science-based nonprofit nutritionfacts.org, I realized that I could easily grow very old talking about all the issues you place on the table. So to begin my aging process here, I would like to pick up the first item you have placed on the table in How Not to Grow and How Not to Age, and that is science. You make note of the fact that we, the people, are continually bamboozled by the exploitation of scientific breakthroughs, and I wonder if you would be so kind as to walk us through a recent case in point. In 2016, researcher Yoshinori Osomi, got that right, won the Nobel Peace Prize for Nobel Prize in Medicine for elucidating the processes of autophagy, which is one word that comes from the Greek words for self and feeding. Yoshinori described the processes by which the body eats its diseased and dying cells and recycles them into healthy new cells. It sounds as though Yoshinori discovered the human body's own fountain of youth, and thus won his Pulitzer Prize. Dr. Greger, what happened when news hit the streets of this wonderful discovery of this process is that a lot of businesses popped up helping people with their autophagy. Are those businesses real, or are we being bamboozled again by science?
Well, not bamboozled by science, but bamboozled by science exploitation, where they take something like stem cells or autophagy, which actually has a real basis in science, in the scientific literature, but then just use those terms to come up with kind of pseudoscientific ways to prey on people. But there are ways to boost autophagy, the primary system for cleaning the body from the inside out, to clearing out accumulated cellular debris that may contribute to the aging process. So aerobic exercise can do it. Fasting can do it, but requires too long of a fast to do it without supervision. There are food components that suppress autophagy that we can avoid, like acrylamide, which is formed in the frying process, and potato chips and french fries. Whereas others, like spermidine and chlorogenic acid in coffee, can help our cells take out the trash and help boost this anti-aging pathway. I encourage readers to consider on a daily basis 60 minutes of moderate to vigorous aerobic activity. Minimize your intake of french fries and potato chips, trying to consume at least 20 milligrams of spermidine by incorporating foods such as tempeh, mushrooms, peas, and wheat germ in your diet, as well as drinking 3 cups a day of regular or decaf coffee.
Simple as that. What about all of the stem cell enhancement machines that you can go into somebody's office and they hook you up to a machine and it'll enhance your production of stem cells and thus autophagy?
There's similar kind of scammy operations happening, but there is something called cellular senescence, which I have a chapter on, which is the accumulation of so-called zombie cells, considered to be one of the foundational hallmarks of aging. Most of our cells only divide about 50 times before stalling out, at which point they secrete inflammatory compounds to signal the immune system to wipe them out. Unfortunately, our ability to remove them declines with age, so our tissues become littered with them. Thankfully, we can prevent premature senescence by averting oxidative DNA damage, and potentially help clear them out by eating natural senolytic compounds in foods such as quercetin, fisetin, and piperlongumin. So to help slow this aging pathway, I encourage readers to consider on a daily basis consuming quercetin-rich foods, beverages, and seasonings such as onions, apples, kale, tea, salt-free capers, eating fresh, frozen, and freeze-dried strawberries, the most concentrated form of fisetin, and seasoning meals with papali, or long pepper, a member of the black pepper family, which contains this purported senolytic compound, piperlongumin.
There's the recipe, and we love it. Now, you pick up the discussion of aging and death. And so we wonder, do we die because we're old?
No, there's no such thing as dying from old age based on a consecutive 34,000 autopsy study, all centenarians, 100%, when actually cut open, found that they died of disease, not old age, even if they appeared perfectly healthy prior to death. Most commonly heart disease, number one killer of younger men and women as well. But that's good news because it's something we can do about it. We can prevent, arrest, and even reverse heart disease with a healthy enough plant-based diet, something that Dr. Dean Ornish first demonstrated in The Lancet in the summer of 1990, showing that arteries can be opened up without drugs, without surgery, just a plant-based diet and lifestyle program in his famous lifestyle heart trial.
Well, good. What about genes? We always see people who live to be very long and we say, well, gosh, they have good genes and they can drink, you know, vodka and eat bad things and still live to be 110.
Based on studies of identical twins, only about 25% of the difference in lifespan between people is determined by genetics. So for what to do over the majority of which we have some control, we can look to the blue zones, these areas of exceptional longevity around the world. The media loves stories of hard-living centenarians who attribute their longevity to some combination of lard, vodka, and favorite brand of cigarette. But how do the world's longest and healthiest living people really eat and live? Well, that's what the blue zones are for, and they all center their diets around whole plant foods. So they minimize processed foods, meat, dairy, sugar, eggs, salt, while maximizing fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes like beans, split peas, chickpeas, lentils, nuts and seeds, mushrooms, herbs, and spices. Basically, real food that grows out of the ground. These are our healthiest choices.
So, best thing to do is look for things that come out of the ground, or things that, or the critters that eat those things that come out of the ground. And then, of course, it helps to have healthy ground for them to come out of as well. So, I often say, if we are what we eat, we are what we eat as well. Fair enough assumption. What do you think about that?
Well, certainly when it comes to bovine spongiform encephalopathy or mad cow disease, what we eats makes a difference. If we're recycling millions of pounds of slaughterhouse waste back into animal feed, which is what we continue to do in the United States, But healthier would be to just eat at the bottom of the food chain, eat whole plant foods, natural foods from fields, not factories, these unprocessed plant foods.
Fields, not factories. Fair enough. How not to age? You have the process pretty well laid out as if it was a roadmap. You start with slowing 11 pathways of aging. You go to the optimal anti-aging regimen, which is something we all like. That's a great roadmap right there. Preserving function. Oh, my goodness. And then your Dr. Greger's anti-aging eight. So I guess there's enough information in your presentation here to last probably for a good 150 hours of conversation. But let's start off with a quick description of pathways of aging. What do you mean by that?
I identify the 11 most promising pathways for slowing the sands of time, ending each with practical proposals for targeting them naturally with diet and lifestyle changes, boosting the anti-aging enzymes and hormones like AMPK, FGF21, sirtuin, and telomeres, while suppressing the pro-aging enzymes and hormones like mTOR and IGF-1, decreasing glycation, inflammation, oxidation, and senescence, while preserving autophagy or telomeres and slowing the epigenetic clock. I know these are all kind of fancy-sounding scientific terms, but I really do try to break it down to easily understandable, doable, practical takeaways.
Well, speaking of easily understood pathways, can we start with epigenetics? Because it's a term we hear quite a bit these days, but not quite sure what it means.
Epigenome is characterized by the pattern of DNA methylation, which can be thought of as a lens through which genetic information is filtered. Of course, it's a lens that could become cloudy as it deteriorates with age. Thankfully, epigenetic changes are reversible, so we may be able to kind of polish it back into focus. How do we do that? Caloric restriction, as well as diet and lifestyle improvements, including physical activity, smoking cessation, and sticking more to the produce aisle than the meat counter, may all slow the epigenetic clock. Getting sufficient levels of the methyl donor nutrient folate can also affect global methylation capacity. So to help boost this anti-aging pathway, I encourage readers to consider on a daily basis restricting calories by 12%, which would be cutting about 250 calories out of a 2,000-calorie-a-day diet, like skipping a piece of pie or cake every day, as well as meeting the 400 microgram recommended daily dose of folate, which is concentrated in greens and beans. So that could be achieved with about a full cup of cooked lentils or edamame, a cup and a half of cooked spinach or asparagus, or 2.5 cups of broccoli, for example.
Mm-hmm. And once you embark on this pathway of restricting your diet, it becomes easier and easier and easier to do that, as at least that's what I found. Is that what you say as well?
Well, in the calorie trial, which is the longest, largest study of caloric restriction to date, indeed, people seem to be able to kind of alter their lifestyles to kind of maintain it long-term over a period of years. And so, you know, once we start, you know, changing our palate by eating foods that aren't so hyper-sweet, hyper-fatty, hyper-salty foods that the processed food industry tries to, you know, kind of numb our palates with, you know, normal, natural, healthy foods start tasting better. And so then you kind of get the best of both worlds. It tastes great, and you get to live longer, too.
There you go. Well, this is the Food Chain Radio Program, Michael Olson, with Dr. Michael Greger, author of How Not to Age, and we all want to know that, so pay attention. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program, Michael Olson, with Dr. Michael Greger, author of How Not to Age. What a fun thing to know. Maybe we can all figure out how to keep or at least retain that which we all want, which is youthful vigor, a little bit longer, maybe 150 years. Well, Dr. Greger, how long can we live?
Well, maybe we just have to live long enough to live forever if we ever get some biotech breakthroughs that enable us to add more years than is currently flowing by. But regardless, there are certainly things we can do to to help our health span and lifespan. There's a tremendous power that we have over our health, our our health, destiny, and longevity. The vast majority of premature death and disability is really preventable with a healthy enough diet and lifestyle.
And you say that only like 25% of our longevity is determined by our genes. So that leaves 75% in our control.
Well, not necessarily within our control. I mean, 75% is due to our environment, some of which is within our control, some of which is not.
Fair enough. I guess that's right. So, but you do lay out a regimen for doing what we can do, what we can control, and there seems to be quite a bit. You start with diet.
Indeed. And so that's where the we look to, for example, the Global Burden of Disease Study, the largest study of risk factors for death and disability in history, that found that the largest life expectancy gains would be expected by eating more legumes, which are beans, split peas, chickpeas, and lentils, followed by eating more whole grains and nuts, and then reducing our consumption of meat, and then reducing our consumption of soda as the five most important things we can do to extend our lifespan.
Quit drinking soda pop, right?
Or at least, you know, it doesn't matter what you eat on your birthdays, holidays, special occasions. But we should indeed try to minimize our intake.
Stop living
on a special occasion.
At least. And then, well, what do centenarians eat? And you've looked around the world and can kind of cataloged what they've eaten. And what do you see?
More than 150 dietary surveys have been done in the blue zones, these areas of exceptional longevity, which may have up to 10 times the rate of centenarians, those who live over 100. And they all center their diets around whole plant foods, with legumes as their chief source of protein, nuts as their as the healthiest snack, water as the best beverage.
Okay, very simple. Stay out of the fast food lane.
Well, that too.
Now, have you seen any studies of what happens to in the blue zone when fast food arrives, or just white flour, for example?
Well, we have an example where the Okinawa Japanese, who used to be the second longest living population in history, they now have more fast food than the rest of Japan and have the worst public health statistics, of the worst obesity rates. And so there's been a big push to eat the Okinawan diet in Okinawa as well.
Wow. So it's almost like an assault by modern times, isn't it? It gets right
down to it. It's not modern times. It's the Western world. These are our fast food joints that are going there. We are westernizing their diets, and now they're eating and living and dying like Americans.
Okay. Now, do you see a difference between the Mediterranean diet and the Okinawan diet?
Well, there's tremendous differences, but they're both centered around whole plant foods with legumes as a primary source of protein, like all the blue zones. And they eat lots of vegetables. So that's what else do you need for a healthy diet?
Okay, simple as that. Stay away from the double, triple cheeseburgers and French fries. You're in the right direction, I guess. Okay.
Even the single burgers. Eating a burger appears to shorten one's life as much as smoking two cigarettes. So if it wouldn't even occur to us to light up before an after lunch, maybe we should choose the bean burrito instead.
There you go. All right. Fair enough. Now, you make note of blue zones, which is where people live a long time by eating very simply, close to the earth. What are red zones?
No such thing as a red zone. Blue zone is what was
named
that because of a demographer. That was the color the demographer used to highlight these particular areas of longevity around the world.
And then you make note of the red, white, and blue zone. Is that the USA that you're talking about?
The specific blue zone, the American blue zone, the only blue zone that actually exists today, and that is the California Seventh-day Adventists in Loma Linda, California, the longest living formerly dead population in human history.
The California Seventh-day Adventists. And what is it that they do that's special? Because they live in California. It couldn't be the environment, or could it?
No, they live about live over a decade longer than the fellow Californians. And they do that by eating a plant-based diet and not smoking and exercising, do all the things I recommend in the book.
All of the things that are there. So you can kind of see, and they live longer? How much longer on average?
12 to 14 years longer.
Wow. Substantial. 12 to 14 years longer. That is huge.
Doing really simple, basic, common sense measures. And so, you know, just not being obese, not smoking, eating more fruits and vegetables can, you know, meet over a decade of life. And so, you know, it's not all or nothing. And it's never too late. Never too late to start eating healthier, to start moving, to stop smoking. We really do have the power.
And now it's right there in front of us, too. California, Seventh-day Adventists. I guess we'll have to go visit them someday and give them a look. So lifestyle you make mention of, and with respect to regimen, it's not just what we eat, but it's our lifestyle. And how does our lifestyle bear on our aging?
Well, according to the Global Burden Disease Study, again, the largest systemic analysis of risk factors for death and disability, diet by far eclipses everything else. Bumping tobacco smoking to number two. Cigarettes only kill about 500,000 Americans every year, so diet kills many more. So the most important decision is where we put the end of our fork. But smoking is important to physical inactivity. It's the 10th and 11th leading cause of death and disability, respectively. And so, you know, unsafe sex, substance abuse, particularly alcohol, you know, are all leading killers. And there's things we can do to improve our lifestyles across the board, even if diet is indeed the most important.
Take us back to alcohol, if you will, because alcohol is not only legal, but respectable. You think about people drinking wine and having whole conversations about the kind of wine they're drinking. So alcohol is part of our culture. What part does it play in our aging?
Well, everyone agrees that heavy drinking during pregnancy, and binge drinking are all bad ideas. But there's been controversy about moderate drinking. Those who tend to live the longest are not the abstainers who drink zero, but those who imbibe a few drinks a week. Unfortunately, this appears to be an artifact of the so-called sick quitter effect, arising from the systemic misclassification of former drinkers as if they were lifelong abstainers. The same reason studies can find higher mortality rates among those who quit smoking compared to those who continue to smoke. It's not that abstention led to poor health, but rather that poor health led to abstention. So according to the World Burden of Disease Study, the World Health Organization, the World Heart Federation, the safest level of drinking is really none. Grapes, barley, and potatoes are best eaten in their non-distilled form, and Johnny Walker is no substitute for actual walking.
Good point. Johnny Walker is no substitute for walking, so walk. And it's always a big deal. Lifestyle, exercise, I guess that fits right in with what you're saying then. Weight control, boy, we have... if you look at any street scene video, what you see is we've seemed to have lost control of weight control.
Well, yeah, but obesity is not some moral failing. The battle of the bulls is a battle against biology. We're living in a toxic food environment, drowning in a sea of excess calories while being bombarded with ads for fast food and processed foods. Becoming overweight is a normal, natural response to the abnormal, unnatural ubiquity of sugary, fatty foods that are concentrated in calories.
And bad fats, too, I think. What do you think about fats? Well, yeah, that's a question I wanted to bring up, is what about fats? What place do fats play in an aging diet, an anti-aging diet?
It depends what kind of fats we're talking about and the sources of those fats. So trans fats and saturated fats can increase one's LDL cholesterol, a primary risk factor for our number one killer of men and women heart disease. So it should be minimized. But whole food sources of fats such as nuts, seeds, avocados, nut butters, seed butters are all health-promoting foods. In fact, none. So one of my anti-aging eats, I encourage people to eat a palmful of walnuts every day on a gram per gram basis. Nuts are associated with lower mortality rates compared to any other food group.
Wow. Okay. That makes me feel good because I have nuts all over my kitchen. And I'm trying to substitute all of the other temptations for nuts, and it's working pretty good. Sleep. Wonderful. Sleep. Sleep has an impact. I imagine that. What impact does sleep have?
It's not clear. I mean, for adults aged 65 and older, 7 to 8 hours of sleep is recommended. Though the relationship between sleep and longevity is uncertain. Insomnia risk does increase with age. Sleeping pills like Ambien are a non-starter, surprisingly ineffective, and actually associated with a higher risk of premature death. The recommended treatment for insomnia is a combination of optimal sleep hygiene and conditioning. I talk about both of those in the book. And warm showers or fit body baths before bedtime, warm socks at night may also help with sleep. Melatonin supplements not recommended due to contamination concerns, but there are melatonin-rich foods such as kiwi fruit and tart cherries, which may help.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a sneaking suspicion that not sleeping probably can drive you crazy faster than just about anything, but I might be wrong. What do you think?
You mean not sleeping at all?
Yeah, but just
Not sleeping at all can actually be fatal, which was we discovered with these horrific experiments in which they kept animals awake long enough until they died.
Mm-hmm. And when we keep ourselves awake in the middle of the night and lose a lot of sleep and only get a couple hours of sleep, and because we're all stressed out, I think that probably has an adverse effect on our health as well. Is that possible?
Well, increased stress is certainly associated with lifestyle behaviors that increase mortality, but the stress itself may not independently shorten lifespan. When stressed, most of us not only eat more, we tend to eat more foods high in sugar, fat, and calories, also increase substance use like alcohol, tobacco, illicit drugs. So these are some of the ways where stress and inadequate sleep can impair our longevity, but it's indirect. It's through our diminishment of healthy habits rather than being a direct detriment to our lifespans.
And you also make mention of stress management via social ties. Who we run around with.
It's the same issue. It's social isolation, loneliness are associated with higher mortality rates. You know, for example, marriage carries a survival benefit. But the detrimental effects of social disconnection and bereavement may actually be mediated by refraining from substance abuse like alcohol and tobacco. So we can be, you know, lonely, we can be stressed, but as long as it doesn't impair our lifestyle, we should be okay.
Okay, fair enough. And then we go to preserving function. What do you mean by preserving function?
Oh, well, it's basically what can we do to preserve our bones, bowels, and circulation, our hair, hearing, and hormone balance, our immune function, joint health, our mind, and our muscles, sex life, and skin, teeth, vision, found there, dignity, and death. I have chapters on each of those.
I want to start with dignity. We have 2.5 minutes on dignity. Do you have something to tell us about preserving the function of dignity?
Yeah, well, hospice focuses on comfort measures to improve the quality of life of the end of life while foregoing life-prolonging treatment, though ironically may actually extend life. Medical aid in dying is unfortunately only legal in a few places, involves a physician prescribing a lethal drug cocktail that a patient then self-administered. But what's legal throughout the United States is voluntarily stopping eating and drinking, also known as VSED, involves making the decision on your own to no longer eat or drink until you die naturally, and I describe how that process works.
Wow. Okay. And you have a whole list of other things that we want to preserve function of, and let's start with bones. I mean, that's what carries it all, does it not? Our bones? How do we preserve our bones?
Well, we can stay away from stomach acid blocking drugs like Prevacid and Prilosec. We can also stay away from tobacco and heavy cannabis use. I talk about the pros and cons of bisphosphonate drugs like Fosamax, the most commonly prescribed drugs. Calcium supplements are not recommended for most individuals due to their poor efficacy and safety. But I do encourage people to get at least 600 milligrams of calcium from calcium-rich food sources, but not from dairy. Meta-analyses show high milk consumption does not appear to offer protection from hip fracture, but is associated instead with premature death. Those getting inadequate sun exposure should consider supplementing with 2,000 international units of vitamin D3 a day. There are some foods that have been associated with bone protective effects, such as prunes, onions, tomatoes, almonds, and large quantities of fruits and vegetables. Alcohol soda and coffee, but evidently not tea, can increase osteoporotic fracture risk. Soy phytoestrogens may be safer than estrogen hormone therapy for preserving bone. And finally, weight-bearing exercise can improve bone strength. But since most osteoporotic fractures are more of a function of falls than bone density, fall prevention is the single most important intervention, which can be accomplished with a combination of lower limb strength exercise and balance training.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break right back. And when we come back, we're going to get into Dr. Greger's Anti-Aging 8.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Yes, this is Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What on the Food Chain radio program. We did have Dr. Michael Greger with us here for a while, who is the author of How Not to Age. Dr. Greger is very sought after by everybody on the and is a very busy guy, had to leave, but he left us with lots of information. And the information I'd like to pick up is related to his favorite 8 things that we can do to really watch over our own aging process. He calls it the Anti-Aging 8. So what I'll do is try to pick those up and go through them for you as best I can. I don't know all of his big words, but I've been over the territory with a lot of different people, and so can maybe throw in a thing or two here. First on his list are nuts, which is kind of surprising to me because they're kind of the forgotten food. We don't see them around much, and yet I have recently come to the conclusion that they are a very good thing to have in the kitchen because I can put a few of them in a little saucer and put them on the table, and then instead of eating something else, I can have a nut or two, and it's an excellent way of putting some good food in your belly that provides for some very good energy. So it's a little bit of on nuts from Dr. Greger's book, How to Fight Aging, I guess. What the heck is the name of that book here? It is How Not to Age, and that's something we all need to do. Why? Because we're all looking for that fountain of youth, that way that we can preserve what we have so that we can enjoy what we want. And what we want, of course, to maintain is our youthfulness. We want to be young forever. So on the top of Dr. Greger's list of 8 things is nuts. Eat nuts. Well, according to the World Health Organization, the constituents of a healthy diet are vegetables, fruits, legumes like beans, lentils, and chickpeas, nuts, and whole grains, while cutting down on added sugars, salt, saturated and trans fats, which are predominantly found in junk foods, meat, and dairy. Actually, those trans fats are found in a lot of fast foods, too, and in a lot of restaurants, which now use vegetable oils to cook their foods. So you can almost taste the fats in the foods that are cooked. So a meta-analysis of prospective studies, which a meta-analysis is when you take a whole bunch of studies and put them together and then study them as one, and they call it a meta-analysis of studies, have shown reduced overall mortality risk for each of these healthy components. Each additional daily serving of vegetables was associated with a 4% lower risk of premature death. So eat a daily serving of vegetables, and you get a 4% lower risk of premature death, with a 6% lower risk for each additional daily serving of fruits, 8% lower risk per serving of whole grains, and that's the whole grains are the opposite of white bread, right? 10% lower risk for a single daily serving of legumes, and 15% lower risk for eating even a daily half serving of nuts. 15%? The primacy of nuts for mortality risk reduction is underscored by the fact that half serving of nuts is only about 15 grams, whereas servings of the other four groups were all larger, up to 100 per serving. Of all a dozen or so defined food groups, nothing beats nuts for reducing the associated risk of dying before one's time. I found that amazing. And yet, there it is. This was from a meta-study of many studies, so it might just be true. Few foods, concludes a review of in a top-rated nutrition journal, have experienced such a vindication as nuts. Nut consumption is associated with a lower risk of dying from stroke, heart disease, respiratory disease, infections, diabetes, and even cancer. More than half of our top 10 killers. One study found that patients with stage 3 colon cancer who ate nuts at least twice a week had more than double the chance of surviving an average of 6.5 years compared to those who never partook. So it seems like when you put everything on the table, one of the things you should put on the table are nuts. So it isn't surprising that eating nuts is associated with a lower risk of dying prematurely. It was associated with as much life extension as regular donut consumption was associated with lifespan contraction. So they're kind of opposites, nuts and donuts. Eat donuts, die prematurely. Eat nuts, live longer. Simple as that. So based on studies tracking the eating habits and deaths of about 500,000 people over time, inadequate nut consumption may be responsible for premature deaths of millions every year around the world. So there it is. Simple as that. What kind of nuts? Well, remarkably, let's have a look at what kind of nuts we should eat here. Well, there is good news and bad news with respect to which kind of nut is the healthiest to eat. If you're anything like me, you're hoping that peanut butter will be included in this nuts are good thought, but they're not. As a matter of fact, no significant change has been associated with peanut butter. It's just not there as much as we would want it to be there. And I do love peanut butter. Now, the problem appears to be is that peanut butters have been all chopped up. And so the good news is that, or the bad news is that in the process of grinding them up, the benefits of the nut disappear over time. That just seems to be the issue there. So whole nut consumption in general has been associated with lower risk of impaired agility and mobility in older men and lower risk of impaired overall function in older women. Wow. And this was in a Harvard Nurses Health study. But in that study, only walnuts were significantly associated with healthy aging after controlling for confounding factors. Of all the nuts investigated in the study, The researchers discovered that the greatest benefits associated with walnuts, particularly when it came to cancer. Individuals eating more than 3 servings a week of walnuts appeared to cut their risk of dying from cancer in half. A review of the available evidence concluded that the plant-based diet that includes walnuts may be the most critical message of all for the public. That is amazing. I mean, that's a truly staggering statistic if it's true. And since it came from Harvard, well, never mind that. But it's the study that came from Harvard that says if you eat walnuts, 3 servings of walnuts a week, 3, you cut your risk of dying from cancer in half. That's something that I think we could all take to the bank. How many nuts are too much to take? Well, surprisingly, not a single one of a dozens of studies adding an average of hundreds of calories of nuts a day for 15 weeks to people's diets resulted in a significant weight gain. Did you hear that? You can eat hundreds of calories of nuts a day for 15 weeks, and you won't gain weight. However, there is a limit. Do not regularly eat more than a cup of nuts a day, for the same reason we should avoid consuming multiple cups of spinach, beet greens, or just about anything else. Or even, it says even rhubarb. So, you know, moderation in everything, I guess, is where we go. So we don't want to be eating a lot, more than cups of per day, cup a day. So there's the statistic on nuts. If we eat walnuts, wow, we can eat almost as many as we want, over a cup a day. Won't gain weight. Gain all of that valuable nutrition, and holy smokes, we could reduce our rate of risk of dying of cancer by over 50%. Is that possible? Did I read that right? And that's right. Eating more than 3 servings a week of walnuts appeared to cut your risk of dying from cancer in half. There it is. Well, next on Dr. Grigor's list are greens. And so what he says is that nuts seem to beat out vegetables in terms of food groups associated with a large, longer life. But that was compared to vegetables in general. Green leafy vegetables can match nuts for potentially decreasing the risk of premature death. And consumption of greens is also associated with lower risk of heart disease, stroke, and few types of cancer, and may even help prevent some of leading causes of age-related vision loss. So, greens can also boost your immunity, slow our metabolism, and protect our body against the effects of pollution, one of the leading causes of death worldwide. That's hard to believe that pollution could be that bad, but apparently it is. So our greatest exposure to the outside world is through our gut, Dr. Grigor says. When you take into consideration all of the little folds in our intestinal lining, its total surface is about half the size of a badminton court. Wow. Yet the lining is extremely thin, just about 50 millionth of a meter. In other words, the barrier between our bloodstream and the outside world is many times thinner than a piece of tissue paper. If the lining of our gut were any thicker, it would be difficult for nutrients to pass through. Our skin needs to be waterproof so we don't start leaking. But our intestinal lining must allow for both nutrients and fluids to be absorbed. Since we have a very fragile layer separating our inner core from our outer chaos, we need a good defense mechanism in place to keep out the bad. and into our immune system. And he says the best way of guarding our immune system is, of course, through dark leafy greens. Number three on Dr. Greger's list of the big three, berries. For all the national dietary guidelines from around the world, the most common key message is simple. Eat more fruits and vegetables. But not all fruits and vegetables are the same. And it reminds you of Napoleon the pig, right? Those who think berries are the very best live longer. But those who say bananas are the best live less long. I've already talked, Dr. Greger says, about the benefits of berries for cognition in the Preserving Your Mind chapter, for immunity and preserving your immune system chapter, and for eyesight in the Preserving Your Vision chapter. Rarely in research are berries separated out from the generic fruit category. By combining the three prospective studies on eating berries and overall longevity, it's clear that those with high berry consumption tend to live significantly longer than those with lower intake of berries. And besides that, what could be more fun than eating berries? I can't think of many because they're so good. Now, that, ladies and gentlemen, is a brief discussion from Dr. Michael Greger. And it was great to have him aboard, and it was kind of great to fill in for him at the end. This has been the Food Chain Radio Program with Michael Olson and Dr. Michael Greger, the author of How Not to Age, of course. Maybe I'm aging here. So, and Dr. Michael Greger, the author of How Not to Age. Thank you all for tuning in. This has been the Food Chain Radio Podcast, and we'll see you next week with more What's Eating What. Thank you all for tuning in.
Award-winning Food Chain. You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.